All right. Welcome to the master class on September 15th. And Jason has volunteered him and Katie. So if you want to go ahead and get started.
Sorry, Katie.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go ahead and share the screen. All right. So Jason and I decided we want to team up and present Microsoft Power BI together today. So I'm actually going to start first. I will be talking about the overview of Power BI and some of the different tools that it provides. And Jason will actually be showcasing the Power BI using the data that that we found. So I'm going to go ahead and start with just what is Power BI. Power BI is a scalable platform that is used to analyze and display data from different data sources. That is used to help gain deeper data insights. It is built on Microsoft Azure, and there are three types. One is the Power BI Desktop, which is the Windows desktop application, and it has the access to the most editing tools and features. The second is the Power BI service, which is an online software as a service that is used for creating and sharing dashboards. So it would be good for users to create these dashboards and kind of share it with their teams or just people within their organization. And then the Power BI mobile, which is the mobile phone and tablet version, which is very good for, you know, if you're doing something and you're on the go and you just can't take out your laptop to view whatever you need. So Power BI have workspaces, which is a space that consists of the major building blocks of Power BI. And there are three major building blocks within a workspace: the data sets, the reports, and dashboards. So the data sets are it's a set of data that you can either just import it in or connect to directly. The reports contain visuals such as the charts and the maps of the data. And the dashboard is a collection of tiles that's pinned from different reports. So basically, to sum it up, a workspace is just a centralized location that houses reports and dashboards for the ease of viewing and sharing with others. So we're going to start with talking about how the data gets imported. And there are two main ways to import the raw data. One is through the CSV extension files, such as from Microsoft Excel. And the other is through the Enterprise Resource Planning System using the Direct Query tool. So the Direct Query tool is used to connect to the data source directly, which is really good if you have real-time reporting or if you have data that changes frequently. And you just don't want to have to manually import it in every time. There is one caveat. It's basically the user experience heavily depends on the performance of the data source. So say if there are multiple users that's using Power BI and it's, you know, pulling from the data source at the same time, it put a strain on the network load and it can lead to just longer loading time. Next, we'll be talking about transforming the data. So transforming the data just help organize and ensure that the performance stay optimal. You can transform the data using the Power Query Editor tool. The tool uses the M language, and you can use it to, you know, rename a query, remove the duplicates, replace value like no value, change data type, or combine multiple tables into one. Sometimes if you're importing this data, the headers of each column could be importing on different rows, and you probably want to fix that and just have it all on one. And then you also want to remove irrelevant columns that you may not need in your reports. The Power BI have three column preview options. One is the quality, which show if there's any error or empty columns that's being imported. The distribution options, which help identify the relationship cardinality. And the profile options, which shows the statistic of the unique items distribution. And now we're going to touch upon Power BI Visuals. Power BI Visuals, it's the fundamental part of reporting because it helps connect the audience to the data visually. I mean, if I'm, you know, you show a report and all you're going to see is just numbers, a lot of, you know, eyes are just going to glaze over it and it's just not going to be that, you know, interesting. So if you add, you know, charts and maps and things like that to the report, it not only does it increase the data retention of the audience, it also, you know, add to the overall appeal of the report. So on the screen, it's going to show you like the default sets of visuals that it's already there on in Power BI. You can also create your own custom one, or you can download more from the Microsoft App Source. So one cool thing is you can also use the R or Python programming language to create these visuals. Okay, so I'm going to have some examples of what, you know, the visuals that you can use. These are going to be what most of us would know, like the column chart, the pie chart, and the line chart. And then you're going to go into some other ones, like you can actually use the combination of the bar and the line together. You can also use the maps visual. So like if you want to show something that is in different cities or countries, things like that, so that is good to use. There's also the funnel visuals, which is, you know, you see a lot of that in sales reports. And you can also do the waterfall visuals. So there's a lot of options. So next, let's touch upon the performance optimization. So basically, why optimize? Well, when using large data size, it can not only put this, you know, a strain on the company's resources, and it also have longer loading time just to see the data. And say if the user is making a selection, the response time is going to be slow. And I mean, what does all this really mean? Well, it just means that it's just going to lead to a negative user experience. So So optimizing will help lower the loading time. It just and the company's resource, and it would just overall give a better user experience when they're working with these reports and data. Ways that you can optimize is, of course, you can either, reduce the size of the data. You can make sure that the correct data type is being used. You can avoid using repeated values. Delete irrelevant columns and rows that's not needed. Use measures instead of numeric columns. And reduce the relationship cardinality levels. So Power BI have the performance analyzer tool, which is good to help measure the performance with the user interaction. It's gonna record the user interaction and the response time every time they make a selection, and it will give you this report. That way you can kind of see and help narrow down where the performance issue is coming from. And now let's talk about designing this report. So you can do a lot of things. You can, add backgrounds and wallpaper to the report. And if you have multiple visuals and you want to emphasize a part of the visuals that you think, if they're going to retain something, you want them to retain that. You can also, change the different font sizes, color, things like that, and make it bigger. To add to that, your eyes will kind of glance over there first. And there are just a few things to consider when designing the report. One is that the visuals will directly impact the performance of the report. So the more visuals you have, the more negatively impacted the performance will be. Therefore, you should only use visuals that are important or relevant to the report. And the other thing is to use the fit to page as the default view, just so you can accommodate users that's using different size screen so that it just doesn't show up all wonky. So now let's talk about the Power BI dashboard. The Power BI dashboard is a customized one-pager that the users can create. It consists of just different pinned visuals that's taken from various reports. The different pinned visuals are actually called tiles, and there are some of the major tiles are the normal report tiles, the live feed tiles, and the streaming data tiles. In dashboard, you cannot edit or have access to the filter, fields, and visuals like you can when designing the report. But you can set alerts for metrics. So say, for example, if you have a monthly target sales quota, so you can actually set this target goal and then set an alert so that it can just notify you when it reaches, or go far below or above that threshold without you having to constantly check. On here, I do have kind of like an example of what a dashboard could look like. And now, let's talk about Power BI Quick Insights. So Quick Insights is a feature in Power BI that uses the machine learning algorithms that produce insights quickly, just using the entire data set. So it uses the data set so that it can find trends quickly for you and to help you produce the report. So this is good for, say, if you don't know where to start when you're building the reports, or if you, as you're building it, you kind of want to see, you know, trends to see if maybe you have overlooked it or kind of compare with what you have. So that that's a really good feature to use. And that's pretty much going to be the end of the quick overview of Power BI. There's a lot more that goes into it, but yeah, this is pretty much like the tip, the starting point. And now I'm going to hand it over to Jason so that he can demonstrate and put this all together using the real data that we found. Thank you.
Good job, Katie. I'm going to take control here of the screen share, if that's all right. That was really good. Can everyone hear me okay? Hate when I'm talking to myself.
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, so we found some real-world data here that we're going to demonstrate in Power BI. A quick disclaimer before we start is that it is COVID-19 data, and that it we understand that, you know, it is how COVID-19 has impacted everybody, and that these are real people and real infections and real fatalities, and that we're just using it for presentation purposes. We wanted to display that. The data we found is of cases of COVID-19 and fatalities per state and per county, and it is per each day. This data is cumulative, so it's the running total kind of. We got it out of GitHub, and it's 2.5 million rows of data. So when I tried to run it through Excel just to see what would happen, just to see what my computer would do, basically, this is the error I got. So obviously that isn't a viable option when trying to work with this data, but Power BI handled it perfectly. Even if it wasn't this large and you could run it through Excel, Power BI gives you a lot more options when dealing with data in this manner. So, first thing I did is I put it into Power Query Editor, like Katie mentioned, and this is where I can transform it any way I want to. I didn't use it in a lot of ways. The main thing I did was I added a few columns, and I split up the date into year, month, and day, and then month name too. So I had, instead of 1, 2, 3 through 12, I had January, February, March. And all this did was give me more options when it came to filtering. I did a lot more in Power Query Editor. As you can see here, these are all the steps that I took. As you can see, a lot of them are removals. That's me trying something and not liking it and taking it out. But the cool thing is they're all tracked. So if you want to go up here and say, well, I liked how the data looked when I did it this way, I can simply revert. I can go and look at it right here and revert back to that. So it's really handy. You don't have to try to recreate anything that you did. And you can, or if you're doing something experimental, you can simply say, I don't like that at all, exit out of it. Here is what the data looked like after we got it. Well, not all of these were here after Power Query Editor, but you can see the year, the state or the month name, the month, and the day. Next, I went back to Power BI, and I made some quick measures. Quick measures are measures that you want to do over the entire column, and they're anything that is commonly done. Variance, average sum, multiplication, running total, month over month, percent, anything that people use a lot. If you can't do what you need to with the quick measure, you can use this data analysis expression, which is what I made down here. This is how I calculated the cases per month or last month cases. And all it is max, so the current cases minus the max of last month. And you get, it looks a lot more complicated than it is. Next, I created a couple simple visualizations. And I got a little off topic here, but it's a good point that sometimes it's best to keep things simple when it comes to visualizations, because you have to gauge your audience. It can detract from the actual data if you over elaborate things, even though it looks nicer. What I made here is a couple bar charts, and all this one is saying is that for every about 210 or 20, and it'll say over here in this table, for every 210 or 20 people who reportedly contracted COVID in Utah, there was one fatality. Now, this is going to be off a little bit because not everybody who got COVID had it reported, of course. So this is one of the simpler things that we could do. The nice thing is that it's all integrated here on this one page. So if I click on Virginia here, it will highlight it here. It will highlight it down here in this one. And it will also highlight it over here in this table. So you can see all of the metrics for it. Next, I created a map, and there's not a lot to talk about on the map, except they're very good for filtering and sorting. I can simply, with two clicks, I can pick multiple states, and it will zoom to those states. I can click one state. I can simply unclick California and go to New York, and I can also click my date over here. Whichever date you want to see, you can go there. And then in order to see in detail, apart from just the color scheme, you would have to hover over the county in order to see the cases and the county name. Or you can easily click on any visualization. You can click a button up top that says make table with it. And so you can really dive into the data, where if you see something you're interested in up here, you can go to the table and see the exact outcome. Next, Power BI really sets itself apart from other programs with its dashboards. So I made a dashboard here, and I've made it filterable by state and by month. So I picked November 2021 in Alabama. And what we have, November 2021, we have 127 cases, 589 that month, and 2006 fatalities, 1.9 ratio fatality to cases. What you see over here looks kind of like a poor visualization because you can't hardly read it, but within the app, all you have to do is hover over each little section and it will give you the detail of that county. So you're not trying to correlate the colors over here with what's over here. You can simply hover over them and see. Now, with this map, with this line graph here in the middle, it's not the same as regular case count, because it's never going to go down because it's cumulative data. The best you're going to get is an even line, which means there's no new cases. So that's one thing to remember on both of these two middle graphs. Next, I went to Arizona, and this is how you would go and view these pie charts over here. You would simply hover over each one, and you can see the percentage, the cases, and the county. The really awesome thing is about these dashboards is that they can be created to be live, or not even live. If you didn't have that capability, you could have them update daily or however often. And it is very useful for people out in the field or whomever is going to read it. Next is a really unique feature that I don't know of any other. Well, it's probably blossoming with a lot of different programs, but it is where you can ask a question and it'll make a graph based on your question. Or you can use some of these predefined ones. None of these really interested me, so I simply asked a question. Now, before I go to the question, I had in mind how I wanted the data to be graphed, and it actually made it that way because what I'm saying is that I don't know better than the program how to display the data, but I did have this as an idea right here. And so one way that could really help is that if you had an idea on how to make a graph, but then it came up as a different way, you might say, wow, that is better. So I'm thinking about possibly going through this Q&A on most displays, just in case it does offer me something that I hadn't thought of. What you can see here is I typed in number of cases and fatalities for each state. Now, this graph is not perfect. The color is blah, and the main thing is these numbers are way too large because it has sum of cases. Now, you can't sum the cumulative data that's already summed. So what I did is I simply made it an actual graph up here with this button, and then it took me 5 minutes to make it the maximum, and then change the colors. And you can simply go through here and see the states, and you can compare how well they did with cases and fatalities to see which cases did better dealing with COVID patients. What I did do is I took out New York and I took out California because of their populations, they scrunched the rest of this graph up so that we could see the other states here a little bit better. If I were to continue this project, I thought, how would I go? I would get more data. Where we found this original stuff in GitHub, they have a mask wearing survey. All you need, because we already have the county in our current data, is data that has a county attribute. That way, because this is our current table and this is our new table, I put it in there. All you need to do is join these with a primary key and a foreign key, give them a relationship, and then you can query them together so that you can compare how mask wearing affected the COVID cases. Another thing you could do is find some other data, which I think would be fairly abundant. One that would be very helpful is population data. So you could tell the per capita of COVID, and you could really get into which states handled it in what ways. Another thing that I would have been interested in is vaccination data to correlate the cases with that, see if there was a major drop. And then also the climate data, and this is mainly my own interest, because I live in a place where there's poor climate half the year, and we spend a lot of time indoors. And I was wondering how that affected if that affected the COVID cases like I expect it would. This is just a very small portion of what Power BI is capable of. But that's what we have today, and we really hope that you enjoyed our presentation, and that I just wanted to mention that Power BI is free. The app is free. And so if you had any data that was not working in Excel or another program, it is not that hard to get your get your feet wet in Power BI, you could make some nice visualizations with it if you gave it a few hours to learn it. The data we found here is at GitHub. This is where it is, but it's all you have to do is Google it if you are interested. And we're open to questions.
Nice job. That was awesome, both of you. Thank you for all that information. Anybody have any questions for them?
Yes, I actually do. I don't know if you can answer or not. So if I'm understanding right, is it kind of similar to SQL?
Not exactly. Yeah, so let me look something up here. There's really no coding. I mean, with exception of that, those calculations we made, there's very mm-hmm. little coding to do. It's a lot of drag and drop and.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot easier.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really think, you know, even if you don't want to, you know, try to become an expert on it, it really is something cool to take a look at, because if you ever make graphs or anything, or try to do calculations on data that won't fit in Excel, it really is handy and easy to learn.
Well, that's all I had. I just thought it looked really, I guess the end game just kind of looked.
We never really did give a picture of the interface, I guess. And that's probably why you got that thought. But there is a graphical interface that's pretty user friendly. They try to make it as user friendly as possible.
Sure. Cool. Awesome. Thanks.
Awesome. Anybody else have any questions for them?
I just want to say great job. I learned a lot as always. I love Power BI, by the way. Don't know anything about it, but I love it every time I see it. Thank you, guys. It was a great job.
Thank you.
All right, Danielle, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, take it away.
Okay, let's see. Oh, okay. Can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay, awesome. All right. So for my presentation, I thought it would be fun to talk about how cybersecurity relates to artificial intelligence. And so I have a couple of videos, I'm not gonna lie. There's a couple of videos in my presentation. So let me just play this first one. If it will play for me. No, of course. Why?
You brought
fun. Trying to get it to cooperate. No. Well, okay. I guess I'll have to play it through here. Okay.
Sad for the bears. Peter and Ingrid want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake them down.
Okay, so for my presentation, this is actually going to be more of like a think piece rather than facts and statistics and how to do anything in particular. So it's more so to bring awareness that AI is in fact within the cybersecurity realm and really any tech realm. And it should be considered, especially when choosing software, and also can be considered as a niche or subfield of cybersecurity. So again, this is just going to be a very surface level overview, since this is kind of a broad topic and it's kind of a little bit too vast to go into detail without going down a rabbit hole. So for starters, what is artificial intelligence? I think that Oracle says it best in that AI is basically systems or machines that mimic human intelligence to perform tasks and can improve themselves based on the information that they collect. So basically what I have to say about that, about AI in general, we're currently living in the fourth industrial revolution. And it's only just started to rev up recently, I think, and very heavily will be picking up in AI. So here, this is a representation of several components that are involved in creating AI and basically help to define, they come together to really execute on that definition of artificial intelligence. And so there's many pieces and there's different branches that can actually dive in deeper into different specializations, but the main overarching topics, they consist of machine learning, deep learning, neural networks, natural language processing, computer vision, and cognitive computing. So they all kind of come together to make effective AI technology. And as far as what I like to think about this image is, this is essentially like the brain of AI in a way. Like our brain functions, we, you know, see visual input and we react on what we see. You know, we have neural networks. And so I think that as AI has developed, we have actually kind of taken our own aspects of humanity and tried to use that in the development of AI, artificial intelligence. So like there's parts of the brain that deals with natural language processing and, of course, machine learning. What we aim to do in AI is to create a machine that is dynamic and not static. So it can be more like the human mind, where because we are dynamic creatures, we evolve, we grow, we do not stay in one specific state. On the right side, this is it's a diagram of basically what represents the agent environment task. And so when I say that, so you see agent and you'll see the environment and you see percepts and actions along with sensors and actuators. So you can think of the agent as, for example, a Roomba vacuum cleaner. And so the Roomba is exposed to its environment being your house. And in its environment, it can perceive information about that environment through the use of its sensors. So it's perceiving through its sensors, such as the camera and maybe touch sensors. And it then acts on that environment by using its actuators, and which in the case of a Roomba, this would be the functionality to suck up dirt or maybe change its direction and move based on what it perceives and the assigned objective. And so all of this is done to make changes on its environment based on what it was designed, its designed goal. So a couple of examples of artificial intelligence. Obviously, we're all well aware of autonomous vehicles. And of course, there's many smart assistant options, Siri, Alexa, Google. And so I just wanted to incorporate a few of these just so that we are all aware, you know, every day we do interact with quite a bit of AI. Here's a couple more examples. So Google Lens, facial recognition. We also have Chatbox that we interact with. And so there's just so many to list. I just wanted to give a few. But the whole idea, of course, is to make our lives easier and more efficient. And, you know, other uses, there's also some things I didn't actually include images on. So like virtual reality headsets such as Oculus, that's a pretty hot topic, as well as definitely augmented reality. I think that's one of the bigger ones that's going on right now. Of course, it would be great to be able to, you know, wear glasses that actually show us information in real life at that moment. So like HoloLens. As far as how AI can be used in cybersecurity, so machine learning can be applied to pattern recognition. So it can use vast amounts of data in combination with formulas and algorithms. So it's similar to regular diagnostics and things like that, but in how there's just more development, more involvement to the data, and it's not static, which I'll elaborate on that a little bit. Yes, so it develops predictions based on new data, and it references patterns in the previous data sets. And the whole point is to adapt and evolve that data to become more efficient, better at realizing how to forecast what to forecast, what's going to happen. So this is really good for threat detection, data analysis, breach risk forecasting, and just general endpoint protection. And in cybersecurity, there are many challenges, which most of these challenges actually correlate to the vastness of the threat landscape, because it's a little bit impossible right now to, like, especially with how short-staffed and how, I mean, I see things all the time where people are trying to hire cybersecurity professionals. So the amount of professionals available are definitely limited. And with AI in use with cybersecurity, it could help alleviate things a little more, take some of the load off, and rather than just analyzing diagnostics. So as far as the attack surface, and it's massive. Some organizations, they can have hundreds of thousands of devices that need to be managed, and it gets a little overwhelming for any individual or group of individuals. And with this short supply of trained security professionals, it's a little intense. And combine that with the fact that data is so expansive, and it's just overwhelming for humans to analyze alone. And again, while diagnostics and metrics help, they're not examples of learning technology. So they don't necessarily have machine learning involved. They're non-learning, they're immutable tools. And so the shift is going towards AI tools to help machine learning in order to make changes and improve and better harden the security landscape. As far as dangers in AI, so the top concern, of course, for application of AI is that it can fall into the hands of criminals or other individuals with malicious intent. With that in mind, it's going to be applied in malicious ways. And when these instances occur, it's just best to fight fire with fire. And it's pretty much inevitable. AI is growing in popularity all over the place. And so I really want to just say that it's better to embrace AI because of all the benefits that it can provide for the advancement in security posture. And, you know, like I said, they're going to use it. So even if we don't use AI, they will. So you might as well just embrace it. Okay. So what are the implications of insecure AI? Just like all other aspects of technology, or pretty much every aspect of technology needs cybersecurity. And so, of course, AI also needs cybersecurity management to prevent exploitation. Just imagine what could happen if somebody just takes control over something, something important, something that is in our everyday life. So in certain circumstances, a vulnerability like that in an AI system could have fatal consequences. And that brings me to this video, if it wants to play for me. Let's see.
Okay.
So I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's just the first about 2 minutes.
It's not fun to have your two-ton SUV's brakes hacked just as you're parking in front of a ditch.
Okay, hold on tight. Hold on.
That's what I've learned from Charlie Miller and Chris Balasek, a pair of hackers who have spent the last year developing a piece of software that can wirelessly sabotage this 2014 Jeep Cherokee. It hasn't been altered in any way. There are no devices attached to it. But like many thousands of Jeeps around the world, it can be remotely hacked over the internet through a cellular connection to its entertainment system that would allow someone to take over its steering, its transmission, and even its brakes. To demonstrate that, I'm going to act as today's crash test dummy and drive it on the highway here in St. Louis, while Charlie and Chris hijack its digital systems from Charlie's house miles away. They wouldn't tell me what they had plans, but they assured me that it wouldn't be anything life-threatening.
Remember, Andy, no matter what happens, don't panic.
It's not the first time I've driven a car while it's being attacked by these two hackers. But in 2013, they were in the back seat. Their laptops were wired into the vehicle through a port in its dashboard. Now they're sending the same sort of attacks remotely, and I have no idea what they might do.
He's going as fast as I've seen him. So
first, we're going to turn the fan on.
Yeah, let's turn the fan on, see if he even notices.
All right, something just turned on, all the fans and AC and stuff. I didn't do that.
The trick started small.
Oh, my God. There's a picture of Charlie and Chris in tracksuits that just appeared on the dashboard.
But as I drove down the interstate, things started getting unpleasant and very loud.
The music is blasting. And I can't see anything because of the windshield wiper fluids.
Okay, do it. Kill the engine.
But we're killing the engine right now.
Actually, accelerate.
I stomped on the gas, but the Jeep slowed to a crawl. I turned on my hazard lights, but I was still stuck in the right lane with no shoulder to escape onto.
Hey. Stuck on the highway.
Oh, I think he's panicking.
Okay. And I have one more video. I promise this is it. Okay. And so the first video was of, you know, obviously of a situation, worst case scenario, where a Jeep was hacked. Of course, that's something that cybersecurity can definitely benefit for AI. And then the second video was, it was actual visual. It was actually a visual effects. It wasn't a real video, of course. But the idea is, you know, there's robots. You, we have robot dogs now. And obviously, everyone's going really, really hot and heavy into robotics. And this is just an example of what could happen if say something was hacked. That was more of a representation of like a sentient AI, but that example could also apply to hacking situations. So, and then this is supposed to be this image, all of these images is supposed to be satire. So basically, it's just kind of to serve as a warning to be responsible in the technology industry. And it's more so, most of these are sentient AI. So not hacked, but that is also a possibility as well. And as far as the actual content learning in AI and its relationship with cybersecurity, I actually did find quite a few resources. So Udemy had a pretty cheap course for AI, several different AI courses, but as far as they had one that was actually related to cybersecurity and AI. And then there was also some content by IBM. They have an ebook. It's kind of like a For Dummies book, their version, with about AI and cybersecurity, if you are interested in that. And LinkedIn Learning also had a course in AI for cybersecurity. And then this image here, this is a free for members course. You could also purchase that for $80 if you are not a member. And finally, there's this book. I've actually read this book. It was very interesting, and it was I would say it came out sometime last year and is actually a pretty good place to start diving in and thinking about the future of AI, especially since it applies to all of us in this internship, given the industry we're in. So sooner or later, we'll come into contact with new and innovative ways to perform our jobs, and AI will have an impact in some shape or form. And I could not put this book down. It kind of opens your eyes to multiple aspects of technology and how it affects our lives. Also, what direction we're going in. It talks about, you know, basically job elimination and what's going to happen when technology gets to the point where it, just like in past industrial revolutions where it took away factory worker jobs and things like that. Once it gets to the point, it already is getting to the point where it can create music, creative new music. It can, you know, write poetry. It can make drawings. You know, it's pretty much limitless in the capabilities. It just depends on who's developing the specific AI in a given circumstance. And outside of that, that's just my little intro into AI and cybersecurity and how they relate. So thank you for listening. Are there any questions, comments, concerns?
I had a kind of a loaded question. What's your thoughts on the people, on the idea that AI will become too advanced for us?
Honestly, it is a very scary thought. I wouldn't be surprised, because it's going to get to a certain point where programs can write themselves. And with that in mind, they can improve on what we've written and overwrited and make things. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but it is definitely a concern. And there's a lot of people, a lot of articles out there just as concerned, but that's not stopping anybody from moving forward with advancement, because that's essentially what we do. We push the limits and we keep building on what we already have.
Sorry, that was a loaded question.
I kind of got one for you. It's I don't know if it's more of a question or a comment, but that's probably a question. What are your thoughts on the possibility of AI warfare? Instead of countries going to war with battle tanks and whatever, what do you think about the possibility of having your own fleet of bots, robots, that two countries are warring, they have the two countries are warring against each other instead of having soldiers? I mean, because if we're going to talk about advancement, okay, soldiers in the military, they can get put out of work too.
Yeah. So as far as it goes, as robots and warfare, I don't foresee that, at least not in the near future. If anything, my concern or my thoughts on that would be more so targeting systems, because, you know, if you can take out your target before it gets to that point, then it's all for nothing. So I'm more concerned with AI being able to, you know, locate people through recognition, facial recognition and the like, and using satellites and everything, locating targets designated by certain entities and wiping them out that way. As far as robot warfare, I don't really see that more really taking effect per se. Maybe if it came down to like DOD, like municipalities, like police department, I could see that happening to take out bias and to also, you know, keep the peace a little better in that sense, to be more ethical in a way. But as far as robots fighting robots or something like that, I don't really see that happening.
So you don't see any Terminator 2 type of action going on?
Not necessarily. I'm not saying I'm ruling that out. That's more like, you know, a machine becoming sentient. And we have so many movies, of course, like you're saying, Terminator, so many instances. Like, we know, I feel like unconsciously, we know, or subconsciously, we know that is a possibility. And if we get to the point, because we're talking about, you know, artificial intelligence that can, like what I was saying, it's dynamic, it can grow, it can change. And if AI can think like we can think, only on a better and higher scale, essentially we could actually end up, you know, eliminating ourselves because of that.
Yeah. And then robots would start procreating with each other.
I don't know. but yeah, it's an interesting topic for sure.
Definitely. Thanks.
So my question is, how do I start securing my car now so nobody does that to me when I'm driving down the highway? how do we get that secure?
That's the thing, because I feel like because of it, it's going to be manufacturer specific, and it's more of a question to the manufacturer. How do you take those steps? What steps are you taking to prevent this from happening?
I would say buy an old car that doesn't have a computer on board yet.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think my truck will get taken over, but I know my car now will, because it has its own OS in there. And that's the thing, and nobody really thinks about it too. These new cars have their own operating systems on there, so they are hackable. Yep. Like everything else. And unless you know what you're doing and the company starts taking care of it, which they should, unlike the water company and the electric companies, which did get attacked and were not ready for it, you know, these car companies need to do the same for the cars that they're selling, because it's going to happen.
I can control my car from my phone, so anybody could hack either my phone or into my car and be able to do exactly whatever they wanted to.
Right. Yeah. And have they told you how to protect your car from something outside?
I'm sure there's like, you know, fine print and like a billion pages somewhere that I've never accessed, but
right. I mean, and they should tell you, but you know, yeah, because you're buying your car, your head's over heels in love with the fact that you've got a car and it's got all the bells and whistles, but we don't think, wait, you know, I drive a lot down south. So that's why I'm thinking, man, with my two kids in the car and I get hacked, what in the world? We're all three of us going to be screaming.
Yeah, I actually had that conversation a couple of years ago with one of my old bosses, and that's kind of the reason why I even got into cybersecurity. So that's something that I'm actually interested in myself. Yeah, I think that's going to be, people may not see it now, but I think that's going to be like a big sector in the future, especially with the emergence of the fully electric vehicles and people getting over-the-air updates. Yeah, it's more than just getting your vehicle hacked and somebody stopping, you know, your brakes from working on the highway. They can steal your information from within the car while you're driving. There's nothing you can do about it, because what are you going to do? You're on the freeway going 70 miles an hour and right. You're getting hacked and you're watching yourself get hacked.
Carrie said she's connected, that they can connect right onto her phone and then go into her thing and on her phone. So exactly. It's like companies aren't thinking about how widespread this can lead, because it's not theirs. Unless they have somebody in their own security for their company saying something, they're not going to think about that. You know, these are different business people. They don't think in that manner.
Exactly. So, it's a product that they're selling. And until an instance actually happens, they're not really going to share that information or focus on that, because that too costs money.
We'll take care of it when it happens. Exactly. It costs money. And then it's going to cost money when you buy the car and everything will go up. So no, don't do it so broken, right?
That's why all of our jobs are like in such desirable, you know, everybody needs cyber, because that's the way of the future. That's where everything's going. And if you don't have like a cyber team on your product line, then you're not ready. And if you're not ready, then you're going to lose a ton of money. So companies that aren't understanding that are not going to make it.
Yeah. If you've got network or something like that is communicated in that sense, connected, any kind of connect, especially with IoT. IoT is so big and so much. I think people are really starting to understand that a little better. It's so easy to build something to make it happen once they learn IoT, because that's mostly engineering teaching you everything behind it. And, you know, connecting your phone to your refrigerator, to your washing machine, to your car, to everything else. It's just so easy.
To your watch.
To your watch. Yeah. I mean, and all that information becomes an open source for somebody to go ahead and take that. So you want to watch that. So everybody think about that.
And you know what? One thing I actually didn't mention this, but, you know, AI and medical. So can you imagine just being under the knife and it's like a robotic arm and that's what's doing your surgery and someone hacks into that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, they've said it, you know, even the defibrillators and the heart
pacemaker.
Yeah. Those are already getting hacked into.
Yeah. Imagine a hitman in 50 years. Yeah. Doesn't need a gun.
Nope. He's just sitting back.
You just need a little bit of skill. Yeah. And you know, you get your contract come in. You're a contract killer now. You get your contract come in, and a push of a button, you made 50 grand because you made somebody's pacemaker stop.
You're just like me. You watch those movies, don't you?
Nah, I actually don't. But I'm a little bit nerdy and geeky about this.
I know,
kind of stuff.
Exactly.
I'm just a little geek about that kind of stuff. I try to think ahead of possible problems. I'm that guy at work that always has the answer to your follow-up question, because I'm trying to anticipate your follow-up question.
Well, this was great. I'm sorry I missed the first half, but you know, this last one was really good and scared me to death. You had just had to show me that video.
Sorry.
But that was great. And that's why I love having this masterclass. Isn't that awesome? These are coming out to be really good. So thank you. Has everybody presented?
Yes, I think we all
did. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you everybody for joining in your time. Thank you, Marcia, for helping me take over. I had a client meeting, so I couldn't be at the beginning.